was possibly louder and more argumentative. I didn't like the smell of liquor, so I must have had a feeling about it. He had a stroke, his first one. In 1935, perhaps, I'm trying to think, 1937. No, it would have been, yes, it would have been the fall of 35. And, no, it wouldn't have been the fall of 36. He was in Chicago, and when they could, they brought him back in on the train, and he was at home for quite some time. I know at that point, he was no longer supposed to either drink or smoke. And I think he decided he was going to live his life the way he wanted to live it, because that's when I can really remember my mother's telling him to be careful or not to do things. He was a proud man. He felt that there were people who claimed that his mind had been affected, and he was going to prove it had not. Through willpower, he continued to write with his right hand, though I don't think it was as strong a signature afterwards as it had been before. And he refused to carry a cane, though when he was tired, it was, his gait was not as steady as it had been before, and that was not drink. In the end, he died in his office on that couch. I mean, he had another stroke that took him off. But his friends, outside of Mr. Richardson, who ultimately died of cirrhosis of the liver, though he had stopped drinking probably, maybe 30 years before he died. But among my father's other friends, particular cronies in Indianapolis, were Dr. Lewis and a pharmacist by the name of Cole, who had a drugstore on Indiana Avenue at the Point. At any rate, they'd come by the house and they'd sit around and drink and talk, and my mother'd get up and fix waffles or pancakes. And I could hear them, you know, in the night downstairs, and I'm sure they drank at those times too. Harriet. Sometimes Miss Harriet. One of the things he said was, take care of my little daughter. Don't you dare go near the water, for if your foot should chance to slip, you'd not refuse to take a dip. Don't ask me what it meant. I mean, nonsense rhymes and things of that kind.
Had he held a public office by 1930?
No public office did he ever hold, except as assistant, special assistant to the Attorney General.
He was not in the legislature.
No, he ran. Actually, he had run numerous times. Oh, yes. He'd run both for the state legislature and for the city council. He had run in, there is a newspaper clipping in which there were several running, but Richardson was running, Henry J. Richardson, on the Democrat side. Neither one was nominated then. My father on the Republican side.
Did I recollect something about Brockenberg being a candidate for president?
No, that was Frank Beckwith. Frank Beckwith was one who, yeah, I can tell you, but I think probably in the Goldwater election, 1960. Yeah.
See, this is all faintly familiar with me, because see, I was associated when I first came back to Huntsville with a fellow named Clarence Benedum.
Benedum was a good friend of Mr. Richardson.
That's right.
And they were always co-counsel on cases.
That's right. He always used Mr. Richardson, who I met, and he was elderly.
Benedum's now dead, but
no,
he's not dead.
No, he's very, very seriously ill.
he was still living. Richardson died in 1964, and Benedum came over and spoke at the bar. Testimony.
Now, those two would tie one on them. The reason I'm asking these questions is that your dad seems to fit the pattern these guys, because these are the old rule-making lawyers. When they went and had a trial, they'd spend 3 or 4 days a week at the trial. When it was over, you knew what was going to happen.
with such tension. As far as this office goes, my predecessors in office had a problem with liquor.
Well,
I mean, at least two of them, but you cannot. I mean, there are extraordinary tensions with having somebody's life in your hands. Well, I can't remember that, but I do know that Richardson stopped. My father did not stop. Richardson also had a problem with asthma at one point, and he became a member of the Mother Church of Christ Scientists, and led an abstemious life at the end. But as far as my father was concerned, I don't know that he was ever, well, he didn't drink his breakfast, put it that way. But I would say probably at the end of a day that he probably drank.
Let me just go for a minute and see if you have any recollection of how you first heard about this lynching and where you were, or what that turned about with you and anyone.
Me personally, I probably didn't even, I have no recollection of hearing about it at the time. Not at all. Now, when I would have heard about it probably was when he was involved in the defense of the boy and his being going off to Marion, that he was the one that was involved, but I can't. It was not anything that left a great impression on me.
You got in touch with him?
No. No, all I told you, my recollection of the lynching really has to do with Merle Wall. And Merle Wall indicated that he was a little shrimp of a man, and he was white, and when he, I mean, obviously, and he worked on criminal appeals for the Attorney General's office. He had been away for some time. He came back under Steers and probably died. I'm not sure that Wall died in office, but he was past his prime. And not much. He was in the appellate division when I was there, and he was quiet. And all I know is that he told me, I knew your Steers didn't hire me because of my father. He never heard of him. But surprise, after I got there, Hutchinson knew of him because his father had been Ogden's deputy, and they'd served together. Lloyd Hutchinson with the Supreme Court now. And Wall, of course, said he knew him, so.
Would you consider Ogden, if you knew Ogden?
I only knew of him. He thought highly of him. I knew that he was a person whose name I held in respect. He never came to the house to visit. He did speak probably at the funeral. And, I mean, I knew him when I knew what he looked like.
Do you think your father had helped him in politics? Were they on the same side? Back then?
I'm sure they were both Republicans, but I gather that basically, it was a matter of mutual respect of people who who loved the law and respected one another's both their ability and their moral standards. I mean, I think that Ogden was a person who, if you're going to talk about Christian gentlemen, that would be him, and I'm sure that was true of my father. No. It was difficult to read Brokenbur's handwriting. It was somewhat angular.
Yeah, I got a copy of that.
Mm-hmm. But he never wrote R.L. Broken Burr always wrote Robert Lee. That's right. I'm getting it from the newspaper now. My mother might remember more. But her mind is not what it was. What she remembers about it.
It's so funny about something like this.
She remembers better what happened long ago than she does. I'm not going to say she doesn't remember, but she's had... She has hardening of the arteries. And she'll say the same thing two or three times in one conversation.
Well, I noticed that this is really intriguing.
But I could also get from my cousin. And yeah, let's see, Lillian would be 79 now, but she is in very good shape.
See, the interesting part about this, just the review of her, so you don't know, I'm going to switch it up.
In all probability, I'd say that Flossie Bailey called my father.
Yeah, that's right.
I mean, there was rather close contact always. We weren't related, but actually there were three sets of Baileys who used to be very close. The other sets in Newcastle, and they're still living, but weren't involved in that.
With both their activities in the NAACP, too.
Well, this is one of the homes where I slept very frequently. Their one child was Walter Charles. We used to have Thanksgiving dinner with him.
Now, is he the one in California?
He's in California. Yeah, did I tell you that?
Somebody did. It may have been you. The corrections department?
He was with the corrections department back in 1962. Now, whether he's still there or not, I don't know. In any case, she had a sister, Mrs. Dunnigan. Not a sister, a cousin, Mrs. Dunnigan, was also active with the NAACP.
Can you describe their home for me?
Mrs. Bailey's home?
Describe
it. Well, it was a two-story frame house. My recollection is that the porch, once again, I guess it was L-shaped, and the porch was in the L. Probably the living room was at front, and then there was, I'm not sure whether there was a bedroom downstairs or not. If so, I never remember being in it. But of course, the dining room and the kitchen were one behind the other. It was on Adams Street. You may find the address someplace. Okay, in Marion. It was a better than ordinary house. I mean, better appointed than some Negro houses. Upstairs would have been, I think the stairs went up from the dining room, and there were several bedrooms upstairs, at least two. I'm not sure whether there were more or not, but it would have been the bedroom that I would have had more familiarity with.
Remember where the telephone was in the house?
Don't know, but I think maybe in the dining room. I wouldn't have been using telephones. That's about all I can really tell you. Faintly, I can't think whether it was yellow or not. This is really kind of pulling. I mean, the house itself. Mostly, I would have seen it at night, because NAACP meetings would have been nights.
Be
at the homes.
At the homes.
And they would be the same people. It was a state NAACP meeting, not the local branches, and it would be whatever the executive board.
Of course, you were in bed part of the time.
Most of the time. I wouldn't know what they talked about. I would know who the children were. For example, I can remember a meeting at the Dunnigan home where Alice Carey was the only one awake, and the older children, Lola Mae and Andy, were asleep, and I guess the baby hadn't been born. I guess maybe Anita was alive. I mean, but in any case, what I would do, I mean, if I was there, it would be a matter simply of being out of sight and let the older people have their meetings.
Like, weeknights or would they do weekend nights?
I don't remember. I doubt if they were, they might have been Friday nights.
And what would this usually, would you usually show up like you said, for instance, it wasn't there, what time would you like to get there?
I don't know, but I think we'd get there at dark.
And then would you have something to eat together and then you'd go off or in the business?
I don't recall eating with them. I remember eating at the Bailey's home, but those would be other occasions. I would say generally my mother and father would both go to these meetings, otherwise I wouldn't have been along, but my mother was not particularly active in the NAACP. She just went with him.
Going back just to them, maybe
and I would doubt seriously if Dr. Bailey was there.
Your father became involved with the Cameron. Case down to Anderson, the cases were actually tried. That was Sullivan was tried without a jury, and I think Brokenberg tried that one. Before the court, that was armed robbery. Cameron was tried for four charges like murder, accessory, rape, accessory. Convicted 2 to 21 involuntary.
They didn't make any difference then, it was just manslaughter.
And the cases were never appealed or anything done with them. So a lot of the testimony related to what happened in the Lynch
is not recorded.
Never recorded. I'm going to Anderson tomorrow to see what they have. One time, you know.
You know they've destroyed the courthouse.
What?
The old Anderson courthouse is destroyed.
Right. One time, we used to, stenographers would have to take their stenography book and stick it in the phone.
Well, you're lucky that it's at least Anderson because Marion threw away, all of their records are in a landfill now.
Yeah, sure did. And I got there just afterwards.
Okay, go on.
They got docket sheets are still there, things like that. File itself are gone, and I was really fortunate to find it. Let me ask you a quick, well anyway, Cameron, prison got out, I don't know what happened, there was conflict and stories what happened, and after that Sullivan also got out, and there was conflict what happened to him, but your brother's involved with the performance of Cameron. Did you ever know a person who made that whole, or all chasing?
No.
Assistant to the governor.
I don't think my father was in with anybody except Ogden. It was not strictly political, and it wasn't a matter of a person with great influence for many people. I'd say another thing, as far as my father's cases were concerned, they were not discussed at home particularly. My mother did not participate and help him decide what to do or things of that kind. That was his life.
I can't find this. Oh, yes, sir. Did you know Dr. L.A. Lewis?
Sure, I just mentioned Dr. Lewis.
Okay. Your father used him to examine Cameron.
All right.
As an alienist.
As a what?
I never heard this term.
That's a term. Wait a minute. I've seen it someplace.
Alienist is what they call it.
Yeah. Sort of like a psychiatrist.
Yeah, I've never seen that term.
I've seen it, but not quite that way. All right, Dr. Lewis. Dr. Lewis was probably the first colored person to intern at Marion County General Hospital. I know somebody who was very much impressed and wanted to be a doctor because he'd seen Dr. Lewis playing tennis out there with the white boys. But in any case, Dr. Lewis lived on Capitol Avenue and up to about 24th and Capitol on the southeast corner. He had four children. He was very fair, and at one point in 1944, I think, he wanted to be a specialist or a resident. He was my family doctor, incidentally. I delivered all my children. But in any case, my understanding is there was an all-night meeting at General Hospital in which the doctors finally decided that they would not accept him and the other applicant at that time. So I think in the end he became a bitter man. I can't tell you precisely when he died, but in his last years he was not really as interested in medicine as he'd been before, and I think that he was, I think he definitely was affected by drink. But he had been a brilliant man.
What was his name?
Lawrence Aldrich Lewis. He has a son now practicing law as L. Aldrich Lewis, Jr.
Now, he was a general practitioner?
Yes. His office was in the Walker Building.
In the Walker Building.
He was also a deputy coroner. No.
No.
What was his physical appearance?
Light complected with, pardon the expression, good hair. If you see his son, you'll know pretty much what he looked like. He couldn't have passed for white, but he was very fair. If you really knew, I suppose you could possibly have passed for a foreigner, Mediterranean extraction. He was not a big man, but he wasn't a small man. He was leaner, I'd say, than my father was. He was not as tall as Mr. Brokenburg. He shared his office in the Walker Building with Dr. Cox, who was a dentist. They had a waiting room on, they had their offices on the third floor looking out on Indiana Avenue. And I guess his office hours started at noon, and usually by the time you got there, you'd get there early, but you had to wait. He took people first come, first served, and he had an office girl who took down the names in which order you came, and then she left about 1 o'clock, and he just called from there. He was also when he was not allowed in General Hospital, I think I'd better say this too, he and Dr. Ward and a few other Negro doctors as private practitioners established a hospital in the 2100 block on Boulevard Place. It's been destroyed now, as it was a big, as it ultimately became Dr. Ward's home. But in any case, they had private patients there and performed surgery because they were not allowed to practice at General's. Yeah, I'd say that late. The Mark Stewart of the Indianapolis Recorder, his wife was in an automobile accident, which her arm was outside the car, and when the car fell over, it scraped it pretty badly, and they thought maybe it would have to be amputated, and he grafted skin from her stomach, and I remember because I went. He saved her arm, basically, but she was in that hospital.
Did he have any particular idiosyncrasies in his speech or anything that was...
No, I would say that there was no difference. I think what you'll have to understand is that educated people believed that their language was the mark of education, and they spoke, there was no such thing as black patois, and they didn't adopt it, and there would have been no difference. None of these people am I thinking of that there was anything particular extraordinary as far as the turn of the phrase or the manner of expression. You had to, I'd say the Negro society was a carbon copy of white society.
That's, I just certainly didn't miss
It distresses me.
It's really fascinating. This is a historical study, and it's really incredible. One of the things that we forget is, you know, people marched off this planet in one way or another. And
people what?
Marched off this planet.
Oh yeah. There, you can see the root.
Absolutely.
You can see that.
It's really,
but yeah. You see, what I don't, there was a difference between Dr. Lewis and my father in that my father was a product of Talladega, which was an American Missionary Association school. It was established by white people who wanted to transport, in fact, the Ivy League schools of the North to the South, and they give Negroes a classical education. And they did. They established a number of schools in the South. You've got the difference. Of course, Tuskegee was the one with the philosophy of being separate and being excellent, but concentrating more on the practical skills. But as far as I know, Dr. Lewis was a product of Indiana from the beginning, and we had not had segregated schools throughout. We had had, in fact, we didn't have segregated schools at the high school level until we had Adams. So that his background would have been one of those who was an excellent student, competing with white students. He learned the same things they learned, and he was... outside of the fact he was a little bit darker, there would have been no distinction. Not in speech or anything else. In fact, I'd say educated people or those who aspired to be professional class made it a point of not associating with the others and not copying the same speech patterns. In fact, I'd say to some extent, I think it made Dr. Lewis less able to cope with the disappointments of being consigned to a black role.
Does the name Reverend William Oglesby mean anything?
Not Oglesby.
Did you ever hear the name Burley Pettiford?
Yep.
Who?
Dr. Pettiford. I'll take it back. I know a Robert Pettiford. Maybe I don't know. But it seems to me there was a Pettiford in Marion. Is this where you're getting it from? I can't tell you what I remember, but I think I know the name.